Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Be the best and you got to pay a little price. Want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me this week, my fabulous co-host, Stu Jackson of therams.com. Stu, how we doing?
Doing great. Just trying to get adjusted to the Monday night football schedule. So for those listening who don't know, everything basically and traditionally gets moved back a day when a team plays on Monday night. And so because of that, I have to adjust the usual Sunday game routine that I have. And I'm sure Jordan has to as well. And so I'm still kind of in the process of doing that and figure out how I'm going to use not only my Tuesday, but my Wednesday, but we're getting there. So
it's good mostly, week. On my end, it's mostly Tucker whose cheese has been moved. He's a very routine oriented dog. So you know, he's moving all of the squeaky vegetables from place to place, trying to figure out how to get settled into, an extra day of mom working from home. You know, he's letting me know he finds it weird, and he's certainly letting me know.
see, it affects all of us in ways we least expect.
There's a ripple effect to this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Stu, stoked to have you on. We're going to start today. Obviously, we're going to get into the Rams 49ers game, which, you know, to be quite honest with you, had like some of the most positive vibes of any Rams loss that I've ever experienced, in terms of the reaction from the fan base and the constructive things that you saw all over the tape from that game. We're going to do a deep dive into that. But obviously, we also have some news to get into. And for not wanting to put Stu in a tough position, I'm going to get to the Cam Akers stuff, and I'll just run you guys through that at first, and then we'll get to a couple of other news items that Stu will weigh in on as well. So you guys, if you've been following along with this situation, the Rams are attempting to trade Cam Akers. Sean McVay confirmed this on Monday. We're recording on a Tuesday morning. Sean McVay confirmed this on Monday. And I would assume that if that does not happen over the next couple of days, Sean McVay gave every indication without saying it outright that Akers would no longer be with the team regardless. So that would mean a release if they can't trade him. This situation is relatively new developing because, as I've reiterated in my reporting over at theathletic.com, people were genuinely and everyone was genuinely really impressed with the way Cam approached his spring and approached his summer, came into training camp, was poised and ready to take over the lead running back role. But there's a confluence of factors that I think, based on my reporting and also my educated opinion on this matter, based on intel gathering and whatnot, a confluence of factors that come into play. So I do believe Sean McVay when he says that this situation is different than last year. Last year, when the Rams sat Cam Akers for a couple of weeks and were working through what they were calling a personal matter, but were really they were trying to trade him and failed to trade him at that time, That was based in a pretty significant lack of communication and clarity. And that had been simmering under the surface for weeks and weeks and weeks to that point. There were variables that included, you know, a lack of communication between Cam and his first year position coach, Rashad Samples, at that time. There was a lack of communication between Sean McVay and the running backs and Cam as well, and kind of an unknown, not quite fully knowing or being aware that there were significant communication issues on the position coach level. There's a lack of clarity in his role. There's a lack of clarity on his side of kind of how he was supposed to be approaching what that role would be or how it would be defined. And as we know, everything was a huge mess in general in 2022 within the Rams. I mean, I had that story and Sean's been open about it this time. Like, he really went inside himself a little bit. So there's a lot of things that happened that were missed and led to other things that happened, right? So this situation this year, in my mind, is more about their shift to a different scheme, which really doesn't start to fully go move from theory to reality until the last days of like the preseason, when they're actually starting to game plan, when they're actually in these joint practices and they're hitting people. So it's late in the game here in terms of when it goes from theory and running, you know, gap concepts and stuff like that on air, essentially, because you're not hitting each other, into actually, hey, this is what this is actually going to look like. And when we game plan for these people, this is what this is going to look like. And so my understanding is that there was a sense that there was just some things that we don't see even. There were just some consistency issues. And then also every week that the coaches have made it clear at almost every position, this is a competition at almost every position, inclusive to running back, even if, you know, he came into camp understanding that this was going to be a lead role. Well, if there are consistency things that are happening, or maybe other players are being more consistent, or maybe just flat out, you know, outperforming him, Sean McVay has made it clear, like, and this inclusive pretty much everywhere except for quarterback and probably like right tackle and Aaron Donald. Like, this is a thing, right? Like, you could even though they've started out the season pretty positively, they're still competing every day in practice. Those practices that I told you guys about throughout the entire offseason, how competitive and like high energy and like really, really there's no other word for it, competitive those are. That hasn't stopped just because the games have started. I mean, media can't watch them all now. We only watch 20 minutes of them. So I can't tell you exactly what's happening, but that's the vibe that I've gotten. And that is very different than last year. You know, this team is moving in a certain direction, and Sean McVay has made this sound like a football decision. I have to say too, I've had nothing but great interactions with Cam. He is, I think, an outstanding person. And I know that there's a sort of a popular tactic right now, or popular opinion right now, to say, oh, it's, you know, he's a disgruntled player or whatever. And frankly, I just think this is more complicated than that, in terms of a young person trying to find his way and his role and doing the things that he needs to do. But the scheme and the strategy and the philosophy shifting in a certain way, and other players rising to the occasion, it doesn't take away the effort. It doesn't take away any of that. It's just, you know, I just think it's always a competition, and certain things just don't fit anymore. And so it's complicated, and that's how, you know, that's how the league is in a lot of ways. And at the same time, I think that Cam can still be a really great running back. I think that if he goes to a place that, you know, he is a fit for in terms of the scheme and the coaching and those types of things, I think he's going to be outstanding. So I genuinely believe that. I've always said that, that he has so much talent in him, especially, you know, we've seen him just be truly outstanding in games. And he did everything coming into this role this year. In my opinion, there's stuff, obviously, I don't know sometimes, but I saw a lot of it during training camp. And in my opinion, he approached it the right way. It's just, you know, it became very clear early on, the philosophical shift that they were moving toward with their run game. And then all of the things that go into that, inclusive to the offensive line and the running backs, and who is really thriving and succeeding in those concepts, and who is doing that consistently, and who is, you know, and there's all kinds of things we don't see at practice too. So I can't speak educatedly on that. I can just tell you that from what I've heard from my reporting, from people inside the building, that it was more to do with consistency, performance, those types of things based on where they're going with their scheme versus what happened last year. So with that, Stu, I'm going to bring you back in after I'm done rambling, because we've also got some Joe Noteboom news, and also some Cooper Kupp news. We're also on calf watch for Joe Burrow here on Monday. But the Joe Noteboom stuff, I think when everyone saw him go down, right, Stu, like, you immediately think, oh no. First of all, if you're empathetic, you think, this poor guy, not again. And then if you're Joe Noteboom, you're like, damn it, not again, right? But let's talk a little bit about what Sean McVay said about what's going on with Joe and what his status looks like.
Yeah, so what McVay shared on Monday was that it was a deep bruise on Noteboom's shoulder, but that it's not expected to impact his availability for Monday Night Football against the Bengals, which should that turn out to be the case, if that does hold up, because again, you never know with unforeseen circumstances and things like that. It'll be big for the continuity of the offensive line, because as it's been well documented by you and it points to me, you know, last season, like they obviously went through several combinations, and truthfully, I can't remember the last time the Rams, maybe it's just because of how many different ones they went through last season, the Rams started the season with the same five guys on the offensive line as far as that same starting combination. And so good news, I would say, a positive outcome, all things considered. And so, yeah, he's expected to be available, and he's done really well at right guard. I know, again, just without getting into specifics, just some of the things that you see on social media and online about, you know, oh, well, you know, him, he's not playing at left tackle anymore, so what does that mean? And things like that. And I mean, he's held up there really well. And I would argue that he's been as big of a part of the success of that offensive line as any of those other guys that have been part of that starting five unit. And so,
yeah, one of the things that they believed in, if the health was the biggest factor with him, and it right. still is, obviously you don't want to leave a game, you know, mid game, anything like that. So the health is always the biggest factor. But one of the things I kept hearing over and over again, when I think it was rightfully concerning to be like, oh, you're resetting your offensive line with 2 weeks left in the preseason. Okay. How's that going to look once you actually start playing games? And the Rams got a much more significant test on Sunday against the 49ers than they did against Seattle, absent some of the pass rush that they've had in the past. But the 49ers were a tough test. And in that first half, especially before Joe Noteboom left with the injury, I mean, just really outstanding. And I think one of the things that kept coming up was, you know, the health is the biggest thing, but he absolutely has the smarts and the ability to fill in at that right guard spot. And I've been impressed with, we have a limited sample size, but had definitely been impressed with him. And so, you know, he'd been dealing with an upper body soft tissue injury earlier. It held him out of the joint practices, which is why I think there was some growing frustration and concern that he was not going to be from himself and from Sean McVay, that it would be a wait and see for that long into the fall. But I think they're all breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief that it's so far looked as good as it has. But Joe knew that it would. I mean, when I talked to him before week one, I mean, he was very, very confident, saying he felt 100% comfortable at that right guard position. And, you know, you always think, okay, grain of salt, but you know, he's not really one to BS. And so, you know, he sort of called his shot and then showed up. So good for the Rams that he's healthy. And then we didn't cover this on the last podcast because the news happened later in the week, but Sean McVay also made some comments this past week about his hopefulness that Cooper Kupp can return from injured reserve within that designated window. So quick refresher of the rules: if a player goes on injured reserve during the season, meaning they have to make the initial 53-man roster to be eligible for return, if they do that, they have to miss four games. And then this thing called the 21-day window opens up. You can designate a player first toward the 21-day window, which means that they have 21 days to be reactivated to the 53-man roster. If they are not reactivated to the 53-man roster within that 21-day window, that is when they go on season-ending IR. But Sean McVay sounded like pretty hopeful, right? Like that, and pretty optimistic about Cooper returning within that time frame, which would, I think, make it the Eagles game. Am I right in remembering that?
Yeah, week five against Philadelphia would be the earliest he'd be eligible to return if all things line up. Yeah, he did sound very optimistic. He was careful to put a timeline on it because, in his words, he didn't want to put the cart before the horse. But
well, actually, I noticed this twice now. He's accidentally. I don't know if it's an accident or just like not realizing it. He said, I want to put the cart before the horse. And I'm like, well, no, you don't want to put the cart. Anyway, it's just this little thing that I keep catching. It's like, no, it's the opposite, dude. You don't want to put the cart before the horse. Anyway, continue, Stu.
Oh, no, you're good. I hadn't noticed that until you thought about it or until you mentioned it. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. but yeah, I mean, he did seem very optimistic and, didn't like I was saying, just cautious about putting a timeline on it. But really the main thing that McVay said about the decision to put Kupp on IR was that it would allow him to figure out whatever's going on with his soft tissue issues and do it in a manner where he wouldn't feel rushed back. You know, obviously if you're a player, it's not the greatest thing to know that you're going to be, you know, out for a minimum of four games, as because, you know, Cooper, just like any player on that roster, on any NFL roster, you know, wants to be out there, you know, helping his team, doing what he can to contribute to their success on the field, especially. And so it's just a way to make sure that he had as much time as possible to, again, figure out what's going on. And that way, again, they're also not rushing him back from this either way, because as you and I both know, the Rams training staff, typically when it comes to soft tissue injuries, whatever it may be, hamstring, whatever, like they tend to play it pretty conservatively just to make sure that the player is absolutely back to full strength. They don't want to rush them back. And so that kind of further aligns to what they've done in the past as far as how they approach, you know, helping a player recover and rehab from those types of injuries. And so if he can get back that fifth week, that would be such a huge boost, obviously, to a Rams offense that already has benefited from the emergence of Puka Nacua and Tutu Atwell, who have, like I said, done a really nice job of holding it down while he's been sidelined. And so, yeah, the earliest and the hope, as McVay said, is week five, but we'll obviously see. But that would be quite the game for him to return if he does indeed get activated for it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, that one's going to be really physical too. And physicality has been some of the themes we've been seeing emerge as an identity now that with this, in many ways, very young or inexperienced group. But I got to thinking the other day with Cooper. I mean, obviously, you don't want to put the cart before the horse, but you usually start to see McVay teams hit a little bit of a slump, like mid to late October into November. Then he recalibrates, they come up with some new ideas, and usually can finish it. 2022 being an extreme outlier of the opposite, like all of it sucked for most of the time. But like in this case, when you've seen them actually like operating as a functional team, you've seen a little bit of a dip because teams figure out what they're doing. They adjust. It takes what I think there's a huge misconception. I learned this like even more so when doing the reporting for the Play Callers podcast series, is like, people think on the outside that it just takes 1 week to problem solve against the team, but that's not the case because you have to establish certain tendencies in order to figure out what the tendency breakers are. So the things that Sean McVay unfolds that are new, teams have to see them do it a couple of times to understand what the tells are, what the solves are, how the space adjusts, how other teams are problem solving against it to sort of funnel down into what the answers are for those certain problems that offense presents. And it's not as simple as, wow, they've got a receiver named Puka Nacua who's like absolutely destroying zone coverage. Okay, let's just all run man. No, you can't, you don't, unless you're like an elite, which they will face some elite defenses, like the Cowboys come to mind here, but like, unless you are an absolute elite shape-shifting style of defense that has quote unquote rules built into your defense that mean you can be moldable. Like Bill Belichick has always had defenses like this that can shape shift in the matter of a couple of weeks versus, you know, 6 or 7 weeks that it would take for certain things. So I just think that that's something that does get considered in this. So all of this to say that the ultimate silver lining, and as you guys know, I'm a glass half full person, but the ultimate silver lining here is, when Cooper Kupp does come back to this offense, there's something new, an elemental thing that hasn't quite been, hasn't really been on tape yet, hasn't been seen. What I think it'll look like is a lot of like vintage Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp stuff, because they've got Puka Nacua sort of in a hybrid Robert Woods Cooper Kupp role right now. I wouldn't say he's necessarily truly playing the F the way that Cooper plays it, as we've talked about in ad nauseum on the show. That role specifically has like a ton of option routes. It's got a lot of different types of little tweaks and nuances that Cooper has really put his fingerprints on it over the years. So it's never going to be played the same by different, by different people. But what they are doing is they're getting Puka really involved in the run game in similar ways that we'd seen Robert Woods get involved. We're seeing him on a lot of those zone beater concepts that Cooper and Robert had run in 2017, 2018, 2019. So I think that you're going to see a lot of sort of like vintage, even though it's funny to say that because it was just a couple years ago, but you're going to see a lot of vintage stuff, but then some new tweaks, because teams are going to start playing the Rams zones differently. Now that they know that these receivers are for real, teams are going to play the zones differently. So that means that there's probably more opportunities outside the hashes for certain receivers. If a defense doesn't want to just fundamentally change, if they're a zone team, they don't want to just in the middle of the season fundamentally change to a man team. You just can't do that. It's just not how it works. So much goes into it. You just can't. And you might not have the players and those types of things. So what you can do is you can play the zones differently. You can bracket in certain ways. You can do little like quick fixes or quick adjustments, those types of things. And when those happen, the Rams' job will be now, starting now and basically back into when Cooper's window opens, is to problem solve for what they think that will look like and then have the answers ready in advance. When I say it, it sounds so simple, but it will not be. But it will be really fun to watch like how all of that unfolds. And I think it does give, as much as you don't want to see a player hurt in a season that is sort of already exceeding many people's expectations, I think adding a star receiver back into the mix after there's been a lot of tape put out already and teams are already adjusting to one thing. I do think that if the Rams do it correctly, they can use it as an advantage, as a leverage point.
Yeah, it's recalibrating, but in a positive way, you know, compared to, again, some of the adjustments, not to call back to last season too many times. Yeah, but due to, due to an unfortunate rash of injuries that, you know, you've had to make adjustments to. But yeah, the flashbacks back to 2020, even like 2017 and 2018 are truly now like coming full circle, especially with Puka's role and the fact that he's wearing number 17.
17. It's crazy, man. I remember you and I talked about this early when you were on one of these earlier shows. It's like, it's a weird deja vu. Like you're watching number 17 run around. He's like getting his legs under him on the yards after catch stuff too. 87 of his 266 yards so far are after the catch. You're starting to just really see, there has been a vacancy, a void of a player like that since Robert got hurt back during that Super Bowl run. And I'd also say too, Stu, and you know this as well as I do, like this offense always really functions at its best with Sean McVay, when there are two above average receivers who not only are able to run, all of the middle of the field stuff, but a variety of alignments, because you can layer them in different ways and add Tutu Atwell to the mix. And I've just been really impressed with what he's been doing. And really, he's a little bit of a zone breaker in himself, because he can work that underneath stuff. And he's often working through, he's like in a lot of these different types of motions that we're seeing all of the coaches in this coaching family use quite a bit to start the year, whether it's the jogging start motion or the out motions or short motions, those types of things. Tutu Atwell is like that guy now for the Rams, which means he's getting clear of certain physical challenges because they're moving him in space even before the snap. And they're changing what types of voids he can attack even before the snap, because he is the motion player. So he also is someone who can do that underneath stuff, but also is really, you know, going to look at his route charts and like some of the things on True Media. Like he's making a lot of tough plays outside the hashes too. And so that kind of leaves the question of what does Van Jefferson's role look like? And I think you've seen through the course of the first 2 weeks that when he has had opportunities, he just flat out needs to make more of those opportunities. Two drops in 2 weeks. And, you know, Sean McVay sort of took some blame for that third down situation. What the play he called kind of made that the must throw option on that third down. Matthew Stafford considered, as he said, he considered scrambling, but the pocket was closing in. So there's not really, it's a split second decision, and it's a go throw on that third down to the crosser. But it was a split safety coverage, and then someone was going to able to come undercut the route. And so I think what I saw is, like, obviously there's a way to run through that route that Mark Sanchez was talking about on the broadcast. But from what I saw, it also looked like Matthew was trying to prevent Van from having to take some tough contact from the help player that was coming down and was going to crash into him at the catch point. And instead, and Van seemed to like be thinking like, I'm going to go and take that contact, and was sort of running and turning his body in a way where he was trying to avoid the undercut defender and go for the stretch catch on that, which would again made him really susceptible to a significant amount of contact on that play. And it almost seemed like Matthew was like protecting him a little bit and throwing the under, like underneath a little bit more. Obviously that left the ball exposed to the undercutting defender. So like I said, it's complicated. There's a lot of nuance to it. The point is, two drops in 2 weeks is not good. And also Van is running a lot of routes, a lot of like, quote unquote, for the love of the game routes intended to stretch the field or stretch that zone out wider because they have to account for him as a vertical threat, which stretches the middle of the field. And you're also seeing Tutu Atwell and Puka Nacua rightfully get a huge amount of targets, specifically targeting the middle of the field. In part, that happens not just because those guys are getting open really well, but also because there's more space to operate because other players are accounting for a vertical receiver who's on the backside of the progression. So, like I said, there's nuance to it. There's layers to it. Sean McVay gave me a great answer yesterday when I asked the question because it's multiple things are true, as we love to say on this show. Yes, Van Jefferson has to play better, but also there's a strategy behind spreading out and maximizing certain concepts against certain types of defenses. There's a strategy that does go behind that, especially in the early days of the season when you're really testing other defenses' roles and you're trying to maximize these really talented young players that they have. At the same time, when Van Jefferson does get those opportunities, he needs to make the most of them.
The other thing I would say too is there will be a time that will come when Van will be counted on to make those catches and be a reliable target, because like you mentioned, I mean, even eventually when we get to the point when, you know, Cooper Kupp returns and they're trying to recalibrate and figure out, you know, what that looks like for the offense and what each person's role looks like as defenses adjust, not only to Cooper's return, but also just as more tape gets out there on, especially the things that Puka and Tutu are doing, you know, he's going to have to still be able to, you know, be a reliable target for Stafford and somebody that basically a long-winded way of saying we shouldn't count him out or act like his role is going to be this way forever or the rest of the season or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like he's going, like eventually there will be a game, I would imagine, where just for whatever reason, you know, Puka and Tutu are, you know, the defense is locked into what those guys are doing and they're going to need him to make some plays. And so not writing Van off yet. And I don't think fans should either at this point.
Yeah. And like there were a couple, the ones I'm more concerned about than even that third down situation, because I think that was a combination of things. But the stuff I'm more concerned about that I think he'll want to clean up is, like, you know, the 49ers, they ran a certain pressure when the Rams were in short yardage run situation. They ran a certain pressure against like this duo play that the Rams love to now throw Kyren Williams on. And Kyren found a rushing lane up the left interior line that was pretty open because of the way that they blocked it. And also Kyren is playing really well. And the second time they ran it, and Van was responsible on that play. He helped with the blocking surface and he was responsible for helping to block. I believe it was a linebacker. It might've been a defensive back, probably a defensive back. I'd have to go back and look at it, out of the play, toward the same side that Steve Avila was blocking. So to the right to help clear that hole on the left side. And so The second time, the 49ers, because they have a say in this as well, and Steve Wilks is an outstanding defensive coordinator, they were adjusting a lot in the second half. And the second time they ran it, this was like the fourth and short play. The Rams were going to run that same play again, that duo play again, and that lane on that left side was going to be open, except the 49ers adjusted and they put 29 Oliver. They put him on like a delayed run blitz is what it looked like. I don't know what exactly it's called that they call it, but like they put him on a little bit of like a delayed run blitz. So a duo block is a timing block. And so the receiver is now running to an outlet instead of, because his guy who he's supposed to block is not where he's supposed to be. So now the receiver is kind of in a little bit of an out, like a, has to guess, figure out like which way he has to go. Is he now turning into an outlet receiver on a play where, who does he have to block? And because of that split second millisecond delay that then Oliver comes and fills the lane, he's basically unblocked as he comes and fills that lane. That was a smart adjustment that the 49ers made on that play, seeing the same look that they had been showed by the Rams earlier that gave them a free lane. Now there was a rusher sort of delayed coming in to that lane and stopping Kyren for a loss. So that was like an example of why football is really freaking cool, first of all, but it was also an example of, you know, that was still Van's responsibility. It's just, there was going to be an adjustment. And so he had to be ready for that adjustment, right? Because that's the Kyle Shanahan way. That's like the Sean McVay dance with Kyle Shanahan that they do every single time. And so I thought that was a pretty significant missed opportunity, that one. And then the drop in week one, you know, I think that that was a catch Van makes. I don't think he's dropped one of those in practice ever. And so, and they run that play all the time. And so, you know, like you said, I don't count him out just yet, but a couple of those small things, the detail things, cleaning those up, I think is going to be really significant for him down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's absolutely a fair assessment to make and say.
What did you make of Sunday's game, Stu? Because I came away with it thinking like, wow, everyone's like feeling really positive about this 7-point loss. I mean, the loss is a loss, but like I came away, I mean, the vibes were good from the fans online on whatever we want to call it now, X or Twitter. The vibes were good there. People found this to be a really constructive experience. And I felt like a big part of that was because the Rams didn't get hit in the mouth. I mean, they were doing the hitting this time. They were like really the physicality and the effort was really there. And you know, after week one, the Seahawks, some of the players were saying they just wanted it more. And that showed up again. And not that they wanted it more, because, you know, you can't count out San Francisco. They look like they're rolling right to a Super Bowl. But at the same time, like in ways that this team has gotten pushed around against the 49ers in the past, that did not happen this time around. And in fact, the Rams were the ones who seemed to be asserting themselves, especially on the line of scrimmage, more than once, particularly through that second quarter. I was really impressed with.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that comes to mind, actually, I'm glad that you mentioned the physicality aspect, especially because this is nothing against any of the previous iterations of the Rams offensive line that I've seen in my time covering the team, but this is the first matchup that, at least from my perspective, my eye test, that I felt like they had the physicality up front and the size up front to match or better handle and adjust that of the 49ers defensive line, defensive front compared to previous years. And I think part of that is because of, again, as you know, we've talked about a lot on this podcast, the size on the interior of the offensive line. You know, that has benefits obviously for the run game and some of the gap scheme stuff they're doing, but also from a pass protection standpoint, it helps a lot with anchoring the pocket and giving Stafford more space to work with. Also helps too when you face a defensive line that has the likes of Nick Bosa and Javon Hargrave. And so I think that was a big difference in the way this matchup or this game unfolded compared to previous Rams 49ers games, as far as how that benefited the Rams. And to your point about the sentiments as well, one of the things that struck me was there was somebody who posted on X, formerly Twitter, again, like you said, whatever you want to call it, that said that this was the least disappointed they had felt about a loss to the 49ers in in some time, which I thought was interesting and almost kind of telling. And so I think it probably also jives too with the fact that, you know, again, for whatever the for what the external narrative was about the team and then how the, at least the first few weeks of the season would go, you know, between the season, the expectations and I guess maybe the optimism that came out of the week one victory and then the showing that happened in week two, like collectively, the vibes seem, like I said, a little bit different maybe than what at least you and I probably observed leading into week one or leading into the regular season. But I don't know how, if you saw it the same or differently, but what did you think?
Yeah, it was really clear. And I think, again, going back to the Cam Akers stuff, I think this coincides with why the timing of this happened when it did was they, after they beat Seattle, they came back in and like, those were really stressful practices. Like you could feel it, you could see it. We weren't seeing the whole thing, but like you'd talk to people, they'd be exhausted and mentally, physically drained, like in a way where, you know, in past times, it would feel like stressful and like in the old kind of stressful. I don't know how to still describe it. It's kind of like how I feel constantly, but like stressed out, but in a deeply like existentially fatigued way. Whereas this was sort of like fatigued, but feeling good about what the work had been put in. I remember Kobe Turner came into the locker room on Thursday and he was like soaked through with sweat, but he was talking to Marquise Copeland and he was like, man, that was the best practice we've had yet. And then he sees that like I'm sort of looking and like I was kind of like, is it okay if I say that? And yeah, he kind of gave me like permission because the locker room is a sacred space. Obviously you don't want to say anything that is off the record, but like it was interesting because I think that it couples with, you know, re-emphasis of, okay, you won a game, you exceeded people's expectations. You haven't really done anything yet. Like you still got a long way to go. You're still learning. You're still growing. Like Sean McVay said it in his post-game speech at Seattle, don't change. Don't you change. And I think that coming back in and having the expectation and standard of those practices so high and as competitive as they seem to be and as exhausting as they seem to be, it was still stressed, but like a different type of stress. And I think that's important to differentiate between, because last year, again, we're calling back last year a lot, but it's so different. The feeling is so different because that kind of stress was, like I said, deeply existential, catastrophic stress. This is productive. This is productive stress. It's like, I shouldn't laugh at this, but it's like people who succeed in our business, people who succeed in football, they're usually like high functioning, anxious people. And that's kind of what it felt like, right? That's the stress. Stu and I are both pointing to our heads as we say this. and I think that, so to me, the timing is less surprising about the Akers situation, especially if it was performance related. That's an aside, obviously, based on the way that practices are. And so leading into a game like this, I think, and then afterward, I think that's going to be the most important thing is that you can see the growth and you could see the willingness to compete in that way and the willingness to put yourself through that type of productive stress from all, if not most people in that locker room and also on that coaching staff. And I think if they can continue that, then they're going to be a really tough out for most teams that they face if they are an out at all. And I joked about this before the beginning. I was like, if these guys are going to be bad. I wasn't joking. Like if these guys are going to be bad, they don't know it because they are very immersed in what the process is and what it feels like. And you really saw that on the field. You saw the effort against the 49ers. You know, I think about things like I used some examples of this in my column at The Athletic. It's not just that they're running more gap schemes. It's the way that they are like seem to be very enthusiastically running the different gap schemes. The way that these linemen are pulling. Stu, we watch the drills on this every day at practice where they're pulling and they're getting these linemen are getting running starts to crash into their blocks and the tight ends are pulling and they're running these different like, you know, it used to be called SIFT, but if you're running it in a power concept, it's called BLAST. And like, they're doing these, like, it even sounds intense, you know, and like, it's, there's a tenacity and like a, like, it's the best word for it, like a physicality to everything that they're doing. And I think that leaks into everything. I mean, you're seeing these receivers, Puka and Tutu, make these really tough catches across the middle in traffic, in contact. It's not just yards after the catch. Tutu Atwell is making some of these really difficult, like very physically contested catches, whether it's, you know, outside the numbers or across the middle. And it's leaking through into everything that they do. It certainly has started up front, in my opinion, with the way that this group is playing together and the way that they've sort of, you know, they're kind of pissed off. And I think that that's really great. They're all very nice people off the field, but like when they play, they're pissed off. And there's less of a, you know, Stafford brings the finesse, whereas it was like the run blocking and the layers of the zone that would unfold and like the passing concept, you know, those would be sort of the finesse, right? But now it's like Stafford's got the finesse and let the guys up front do the dirty work and the physical work. But then Stafford will like bring it out sometimes. Some of the scrambling that he's done and the way that he stood in the pocket. I mean, there are a million different types of ways to be physical. And I think this team is really taking a lot of energy in embodying that. And it's hard to like explain something that's sort of an intangible feeling every day, but you feel it when you're there every day. And it is a very interesting change from, not to keep bringing up, but it is a very interesting, there's a palpable shift that has occurred.
Well, not only if you're, when you're there, do you feel it? But I would say too, that you know it when you see it.
Yeah.
And again, I think part of that too is just because of the nature of our jobs, with as much practice as we watch and as many games as we watch. And again, as many games as we watched last year, especially, like it is a very like tangible and observable thing that like, even if you're a fan watching the game at home on TV or watching the game in person at the stadium, whether it's a home game or a road game. Like, I think that's, and I, again, to go back to the conversation we were having about just kind of the sentiment and reaction after the game from the fans across social media. Like, I think that's also part of it too. And I think they notice it too, as far as just that different feeling and how it looks different and just and how it comes off with the way that the players are playing, especially. It's kind of like you said, like it's hard to explain. The best way I can put it, not to repeat myself, but it's just that familiar phrase, like you know it when you see it.
Right. Exactly. I agree. On the converse, as is often the case against the 49ers, some self-inflicted mistakes that led to big game shifts. I think the third and 10 sack to me was a really significant pivotal point in this. Obviously the turnovers, you can't turn the ball over against this team. They will punish you for it almost every single time. 6 points allowed off turnovers, but still there's a 7-point differentiation between the teams, which apparently is getting a lot of angry sentiment from Vegas. I don't bet personally, but go back and watch Sean McVay's press conference if you're seeking answers on that question in terms of why I kicked the field goals. It's like a timing thing is what he was saying. Anyway, but some things obviously that were issued, missed tackles. I did a dive on True Media and the Rams were tied for like the fifth worst tackling team, which again, it's 49ers. They know how to make you miss in different ways. But at the same time, can't be missing tackles like this. It was, the stat is not full missed tackle. Instead, it's a little bit more advanced than just, counting whiffs, right? Because that's not usually always the, you know, scheme can add to that. It's basically counting the number of times an initial contact player on a ball carrier did not secure the tackle. It was 14 times. That just can't happen. Cannot have that. It's the fifth worst in the league. The Chargers struggled with that this last week, and they're starting in quite a hole, and you certainly don't want to be missing tackles at that rate. And that was bad. The 51 yard, there was a communication breakdown on the 51 yard explosive run by Christian McCaffrey. you know, that the defense still has a lot to clean up in 2 minute. There was a bad penalty that helped extend that drive. And then obviously Deebo Samuel bouncing around, you know, that Kyle Shanahan was really testing the edges of this defense throughout much of the game and finding some success there in the worst possible moments for the Rams. Mushy edges, I say it all the time, mushy edges still have to get cleaned up with this group. You saw them really how hard they were really studying on the screens. That's sometimes how Kyle Shanahan will test the edges of a defense, is this little screen plays and the condensed formations. Michael Hoyt made an incredible play, sort of like scraping a screen, which is like disgusting, reminds me of like a callus or like a blister or something, but like scraping the screen.
Wiping a bug off a windshield or something.
Yeah, like, ooh, gross. like scraping a screen and tackling Deebo Samuel. He was in, like, I've talked about this before in the podcast. It's really cool. I'm going to track this as it continues to develop, because he's sometimes in this position concept that Vic Fangio was using a lot of back in the day. It was like, it's called bonus hook. It's basically a way to it's a big middle finger to any receivers who are trying to come clean off the line of scrimmage, like, because you have to get past that guy and he's going to hit you. And so,
cause he's dropping back into coverage, right?
Yeah. Cause he's in the flat and like, he's got this sort of radius of space, yeah, that he's accountable for, but he's also, I talked to him about this last week. He's also like pattern matching. He's studying route concepts and formations, the way that the DBs have to do, especially because, you know, those screen plays are going to be coming if you're playing the 49ers. So that was really, I know he'd worked really hard on that play specifically. So it was cool to watch him make that play. And then Darion Kendrick, even though he had some issues with penalties and then some inconsistencies, still continues to bring that physicality that the Rams do want and do need, just cleaning up a couple of the technical things, because he helped make a tackle. I think it was on Christian McCaffrey, even though he was sort of like being blocked out of the play by two people. And it was one of those little short catch and run, you know, dump offs that they use to test the edges. So I think like those things are positive, but in terms of pure runs around like outside zone, the wide zone runs, those are a problem. We've seen this come up since the preseason. We've talked about this. But I was also impressed with how they were doing in terms of those mid zone and gap run concepts, because even though Aaron Donald didn't show up on the stat sheet, he was really disruptive in that phase. And then Kobe Turner had a great game. Stu, I know you've been tracking that with Kobe Turner as well.
Yeah, he was doing awesome. He's somebody that, and maybe it's just my personal bias from writing about him in a long form feature this summer and kind of knowing his background about the way he learns and studies the game, but I feel like because of those habits, he's somebody that as the season goes on, they're just going to have a very hard time keeping off the field. Not only because of, again, he's still learning like any rookie, especially when it comes to, you know, technique and things like that, but you can see it coming together for him. And like, again, he's a willing learner. And so I'm very excited to see where that goes for him, because, you know, as of right now, it's not like a huge, huge role per se, at least just sort of what you see, you know, on tape and in the game. But when he is out there, he is making an impact, and you can see it. If you want a good example, Brian Baldinger, who does all these breakdowns on Twitter, X, whatever you guys want to call it. he spotlighted a few of Kobe's reps. He's got a few clips or a video of those clips on his timeline that I'd encourage you to check out. But yeah, very, very much making a difference. And for a defensive line rotation that, again, lost A'shaun Robinson, lost Greg Gaines, and needed some guys to step up, him playing the way he has, even for just the first 2 weeks of the season, and especially yesterday, has been a really, really positive development.
Yeah, overall, I mean, obviously those things, the 2 minute that the 49ers just cleaved their way down the field, and frankly, that to me had a significant impact on the outcome of the game, and then the turnovers, obviously, and then that sack on 3rd and 10, I think those were the key moments that changed the game. But at the same time, I think like you get the sense that it's all like sort of coming together. It is funny, you know, to see that this is not a team that will say like we kept receipts or anything. They some of them did, but like it is funny to see sort of the excitement over from the same sort of people who from the same people who were like writing about how hilarious the Rams roster is and all of that. And it is interesting because, I mean, on paper, that roster looked wow. But if you were on the ground every day, you could see the way that it was starting to get put together and the way that things were starting to come together. And I think that if this team can, like Sean McVay said, not change that mentality and not change that energy, I think you're going to continue to start seeing it come together or to continue to see it coming together. And I think like this is a huge opportunity up ahead to do that against a team whose offense they are very familiar with, a person who Sean McVay is very familiar with, and Zach Taylor, a defense that they're very familiar with. I think that this is an opportunity for them coming up to win a really tough, tough road game and to show their work on in a game that I think when people saw it was the Rams on Monday Night Football, there was sort of this like, well, that's going to be terrible, you know, similar to last week. Well, they're going to get blown out. You know, I saw a lot of the columnists in San Francisco like, oh, they're going to get blown out. And it's just not the case. They're fighting really hard. And I think even if they lose games, they're going to be a tough out. And so it's interesting because you get the sense that the pieces are starting to like click into place. There's one or two things that are just like, ooh, and then you just technically didn't have that or like physically, you know, missed on that. But like things are starting to come together in the way that you could see what the original vision was sort of supposed to be. And I think it's going to be a big opportunity. We'll be there, Stu. We'll be there and in the natty. And I'm not getting chilly. I've never had that chilly. I refuse, just out of protection of my bowels. So nobody wants that. Nobody wants to be around that. So definitely not going to be doing that. But I know I'm looking forward to seeing all the work that they've done so far, and especially against a real challenge like this. And I'm sure you are too.
Yeah, it should be a really great matchup, especially for a young secondary that is continuing to find its way. Anytime you can match up against two receivers of the caliber of Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, especially, that's always going to be, you know, beneficial for your development and just a beneficial learning opportunity. I don't know that I'll get the chili either, only just because out of principle, it feels like having it on, what would it be, September 25th? And with how warm I still expect it to be, I'd just prefer to have any sort of chili, whether it be Cincinnati's version or any other version, when it's actually cold outside. And
that'll get us out of early it. Fall. That could be our excuse. Yeah.
Seasonally excused.
Yes.
Or seasonal excuse is the card excuse. I'm playing.
Yeah. I love that. I'm going to use that. But Stu, thank you so much for joining me today on 11 Personnel for your, I guess, like pretty regular appearance now. We're stoked. We love you. We love having you on. You guys go follow Stu's work over at therams.com. He's always coming out with really interesting stuff, good features, outstanding stuff all around. And then also go follow, as usual, The Athletic, where you can, as always, get a fantastic discount. My favorite thing in the world. If you are not currently subscribe to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast. You always get my favorite thing in the world, which is a great discount. You guys, we will be back next week. And in the meantime, hope you're staying hydrated and caffeinated. I know Stu and I both are. As we point to our brains, we also hold up our coffees. It's like the unimind here. We're thriving. You guys take care of yourselves and each other. Catch you next time.